let's go ahead and start. Good morning. Welcome to Sunday Morning. It's a news and public affairs programming service of Cox Media Group. I'm your host, Mimi Lawson, and I've got a great guy in here with me this morning, already very funny. Tom Jamison is the fire chief of the Eastlake Fire District. Welcome this morning.
Good morning. Thank you.
Thanks for coming in. We're going to talk about something that's on everybody's mind these days, and that's wildfires. Have we ever had a drought this bad?
We have, but it's been quite some time. I think you have to go back to about 1998.
Really?
To get a year this bad.
How little rain do we really have? I mean, is there a way to measure that?
There is, and I think they're saying right now, year to date, we're about 5 inches behind where we should be, and that's coming out of a dry final quarter of last year. So this is all cumulative.
Our weather is gorgeous, but I keep hearing everybody say, you know, while we don't have any humidity and while we haven't had any rain, and it's wonderful for, of course, the people that are coming to visit and us too, it's horrible for what's going on around us, isn't it?
It's fantastic tourist weather. So
yes,
for that, we're grateful.
Right.
But as far as wildfire goes, it couldn't be worse conditions.
I was thinking that the media was overplaying stuff because, you know, they have a tendency to do that. And they were calling it Florida on fire. And then they put up a map of all the wildfires that are going on in the state. And I was shocked. It's like 100, isn't it?
More than that, actually. Year to date, we have had 2,015 fires. In the state of Florida.
What?
That's all encompassing within the borders of Florida. And that has burned about 170,000 acres. To put that in perspective, if you were to take the county of Pinellas and you were to burn about a third of it to the ground, that would be about the size of the area that's burned so far.
You know, we came pretty close to doing that a couple weeks ago over there on Gandy, didn't we?
We did. We did. That was a very visible fire in a place you wouldn't really expect one to pop up.
Right. I thought about that because I've lived in Pasco County, and I know they had some fires up there near the Boy Scout Ranch and that kind of stuff, and in Citrus County. That you kind of expect because there's big expanses. I know there was one in the Ocala National Forest. That's what you expect. But you don't expect to be driving home on 275 and seeing a blaze on the side of the road.
Right. Or have to close a major highway for a period of time, which they did last week over there.
Right. That is major. Is it climate change? Is it just, I mean, I've lived here 30 years and I've heard all the time, we've been in a drought almost, I think, the whole time I've lived here. Mm-hmm. People don't understand just how bad it is, but is it global warming? Is it people not being careful? What do you attribute this to?
Well, I'm no scientist. I'm just a fire chief, but I did stay at a Holiday Inn Express last night, so I guess we can use this. I look at the trends. There's a lot of fact-based evidence behind the fact that we are seeing climate change.
Mm-hmm.
We certainly have clocked more hotter than average record-breaking heat days in the last 365 days. So is that a trend upward? It appears to be so.
Mm-hmm. And we really don't know why necessarily. It doesn't really matter. The thing that concerns me, Tom, is why are we seeing so many people starting fires? I know that a lot of it's kids. I roll my eyes about it, too. Don't we have enough problems? Why is this happening?
I think there's a disconnect there. My brethren up in Pasco County have been on the news quite a bit about this lately for the fact they've got a burn ban going on up there, and yet they have daily they're catching people that are doing burns. And I don't know whether it is just people thinking, well, my little pile of leaves is going to cause a problem, or I can get away with this because it's small enough, or if I roast a hot dog over this fire, suddenly it's a cooking fire.
Right.
I don't know what it is, but the bottom line is we are in a very high-risk position right now. The majority of the state is in an extremely dry environment, and as you can see from what just happened in Pasco County in this most recent fire, that thing blew up from a couple acres to over 2,000 acres.
Right.
Throughout the course of an afternoon.
I wonder about that, too, because I've lived, like I said, up in that area, and I know there are a lot of people who can't afford garbage service and that what they're doing is burning their household garbage. They have no other choice. I wonder if it is a situation where we're talking about monetary issues or whether it's just an issue, and I don't want to say of stupidity, but just not knowing that this is really as big of a problem as it is.
Let's call it ignorance instead of stupidity.
All right, I like that better.
Ignorance is curable, stupidity is terminal. In this case, we'll choose to believe that it's curable.
All right.
And it's a risk versus benefit situation. Maybe it's an inexpensive way to get rid of your waste.
Right.
But there's a couple of reasons that might not be the best thing in the long run. Number one is the obvious. If that fire spreads, you could lose everything.
And that happened.
Yes, absolutely. And two, it's just not really good for the environment as a whole. So mm-hmm. why don't we go ahead and invest a little bit in getting rid of it the better way, as mm-hmm. opposed to lighting it on fire?
With Grady Judd in Polk County, and they went up on this guy, several deputies, and told him he needed to stop burning. And not only did he attack them, but then he said that he was going to kill Grady Judd. And I loved Grady's answer to that. I will kill you dead.
Well, you know where the most dangerous place in the world is, don't you?
Hmm.
Between Grady Judd and a camera.
Yeah. I'm sure he would probably laugh at that, yeah. But I think it's interesting that people really feel that it is their right to do this, even though it is causing the harm in others. I mean, it's like the old Star Trek thing, the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the one. Why is it so hard to get that through to people's heads, that they can really cause not only their own home to burn down, but everybody else in the neighborhood, or they don't care?
If I knew the answer to that mm-hmm. question, we could make the problem go away.
Right.
And again, I think it comes back to a disconnect of thinking, well, this won't happen to me. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like the mentality of a teenager where everything is consequence-driven at that point in time, and they're not thinking of the ramifications of what could happen.
Right.
And the bottom line is it has happened, it can happen, it could happen to them.
Mm-hmm.
And before they know it, they've impacted themselves negatively by losing everything they own, mm-hmm. but potentially neighbors as well.
Right. Have you run up on some of these kids that are starting the wildfires? I'm understanding that a lot of teenagers have started. And I'm wondering, after they've done this, do they then get what kind of damage they've caused?
We just had a situation mm-hmm. not too long ago. Matter of fact, the past couple of weeks, where we had a couple of kids that started a fire.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't their intention to start a larger wildland fire. They were just out there with a small campfire that they failed to manage, and it got bigger. And there are ways that we can raise their level of awareness of what happened. Usually when it's teenagers, we don't use something like a juvenile fire setter program, which is one of the programs out there for adolescents. But what we will do is we'll bring them in, and the parents in this case were very, very cooperative mm-hmm. with us. We brought them in. We did some community service. We actually did a wildland fire awareness education piece up at the Brooker Creek Education Center in the northeast piece of the county.
Mm-hmm.
And the kids were out there all day.
Mm-hmm.
They learned a lot. They realize now that there is a great cost to what they did, both in risk to the community and in terms of public safety resources that are used to take care of something like that.
Right. I guess what I'm really talking about are the kids that are doing it on purpose who think it's funny. I mean, how do we get across to those people? Are they budding criminals, adult criminals is what we're talking about?
Potentially so.
Mm-hmm.
To me, you could lump them in the same category as the problem that we're having here in St. Petersburg and elsewhere across the country with kids that steal cars.
Right.
It's if they're doing it for kicks, there's a risk to it. And in order to make it consequence-driven, you have to put the penalty at a point where it changes the behavior.
Uh-huh.
And the penalty shouldn't be about just a punitive penalty.
Mm-hmm.
It should be a discipline that creates that change of behavior.
Right.
And I am no expert in that, but there has to be something, again, that is consequence-driven enough to change the behavior in the child. And it can't be fining them, because who pays the fine?
The parents.
Right. So there has to be something else. Community service, something.
And you mentioning education before and that you have a couple of these education programs. Can you talk about them? Do you go into schools with them?
We actually use them in a targeted way for kids that have had some exposure to fire starting,
mm-hmm.
an interest in or a fascination with fire, to try to damp that down a bit.
Okay.
But we do have a strong public education program. And one of the things we do is go into schools and raise awareness for fire risk and prevention.
So if somebody wanted that program to be like at the Girl Scout or Boy Scout meeting or in their schools, could they contact you and have you guys come out?
Absolutely.
Cool.
In fact, we're partnered with, Eastlake is partnered with other cities within Pinellas County.
Mm-hmm.
Pinellas County itself has public education outreach capabilities. And even if it's not within our districts, as here today, I'm not in my district.
Right.
But we're willing to come out there and do whatever we can to help mitigate that risk.
We had talked about the whole state of Florida. So you say you have these reciprocal relationships. You have reciprocal relationships with, say, Sarasota County.
We do.
Yeah.
All of Pinellas County, first of all, is tied together under what's called automatic aid. So all the fire departments in Pinellas County respond seamlessly. The closest available unit will always go, whether it's Eastlake, Palm Harbor, St. Pete, Pinellas Park. Whoever is available will respond to that call.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way we're set up.
Great.
Outside the borders, we have mutual aid agreements through the state emergency response plan. So recently, the county sent a team down to, I believe it was Collier County,
right,
to help them with their wildfires.
Mm-hmm. There was a big one there.
And when they ask, we go. Just like when, what was the recent hurricane we had that almost hit the East Coast?
Yeah, I can't remember the name of it either.
Began with an M. I know that.
Yeah, maybe. No, it wasn't that.
Okay, it could have been me.
Yeah, but we
deployed a lot of resources to that at the county's request, and we had hundreds of people staged over in Lakeland waiting to see whether that hurricane was going to hit the East Coast or not.
Right.
So we were forward deployed to respond to it. Wherever we're needed, we go.
We were talking about Sarasota County. They had a big fire down there as well.
Mm-hmm.
And that was started by teenagers. So this is something that really concerns me because I understand when a mistake happens. You start a fire, even if you're cooking out or something like that, I get a mistake. But what really bothers me is this intentional acts. And I guess it's hard because I don't have that kind of mindset, neither do you, to deal with people who think that kind of thing is funny or that think that it's that they somehow accomplished something by taking all those resources out. I just wonder how you get through to people like that.
That is for a sociologic psychotherapist to figure out.
Right.
Again, that age, you know how teenagers are. They don't think of the long-term consequences. They are the highest risk group for vehicle crashes.
Right.
They are spontaneous actors without much forethought.
Right.
And until we get that frontal lobe developed, right, in about their early 20s or so, they are going to have that spontaneous behavior. So I guess really the best way we can act on it from our end of things is public safety people is to do our best to educate them as to the consequences and risks and hope it soaks in. Case in point, we do prom promise program. A lot of places will do this prior to prom where we'll go in, we'll set up on the infield of a stadium in a high school, we'll do a mock auto accident, we'll bring in Bayflight to fly a patient out. It's a very dramatic presentation, moulage the patients up. And you hope out of that entire group of people sitting there watching, and all those juniors and seniors from that school that sit and watch this, if you impact or change the behavior of one kid,
right,
that prevents him or her from doing something that's risky and creates an injury or a death, you've accomplished your goal. So it's hard to measure the success of something like that,
right?
But you have to make the concerted effort.
You know, it reminds me of, we talk about all these risks of terrorism and the things that we hear about and actually happen, but it is said all the time, we don't know how many things have been thwarted. You're talking about the same situation because we don't know. That fire hasn't been set, so we can't count that.
Yeah. That's exactly right. Yeah. And really, I look at it this way too. We have put a lot more focus on public education in recent years. And if we were completely successful at public education, then the engines and the rescue units would run no calls.
Right.
Because we would have proactively reduced those risks.
Right.
We know that will never happen.
Mm-hmm.
Some of that is measurable. As you look at a community's risks and you realize what we're doing out there lowers the amount of calls in that category.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say you're quantifying of the risk of the group you're talking about in teenage behavior when it comes to fire setting would be to have a very strong public education program, both proactively and reactively for the ones that are caught doing
it,
and watch to see if those numbers trend down.
And of course, this show is one of those ideas that we're trying to get out to people. But I guess I want to ask you, where do you see most of the fires come from? Are they lightning strikes? Are they intentionally set, mistakenly set? Do you have some kind of statistics on that?
I don't have solid statistics right now, and a lot of that, I think, depends on the time of year.
Sure.
A lot of what we've seen lately has been intentional. A number of them, a smaller number, have been lightning strikes from some of these fronts that we've had come through that drop a little bit of rain and then...
But start fires.
Right. And that happens, of course, quite a bit during the summer months, too, but we have the benefit of a more moist environment.
Right. You know what bothers me is people that I would think are intelligent, like my neighbors, are still watering their lawns every single day. And I have a problem with people who, again, the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the one, who think that it's okay to use those resources, forget everybody else. And how do you get through to people? Is it possible to change their attitude towards what's going on around them? Again, I think we're probably talking about psychological issues here. But do you find that when you go in and talk to some of these people that they get an aha moment?
Some do. You can see when you reach some people, and you hope they actually internalize the message that you're trying to give them. And the irony is, well, on the one side, we're trying to conserve water by telling them to adhere to the restrictions that we have. On the other, one of the things that we tell people that will eliminate the risk of their house being involved in a wildfire is taking care of the yard and keeping it well moistened, if you will, and a couple other things, making sure you don't have stuff out there that serves as fuel, whether it's some of that dead refuse that you mm-hmm. have laying around, or leaves in your gutters, or your ornamental trees and so on in your yard being pruned up 6 to 8 feet off the ground.
Right.
Over here in Polk City, when we had that very large visible fire at Indian Lakes Estates, mm-hmm. all over the news, very graphic television footage, not one house lost.
Really?
Yes. Some outlier structures burned, but no houses. And the reason is they went through a program last year, I believe it was, called FireWise, where they applied these principles of creating what we call a defensible barrier mm-hmm. around the homes so that the fire can't reach the house.
I see.
And the proof, obviously, is in the outcome here.
Wow, that's amazing. I didn't realize that. Mm-hmm. We were talking about a year or so ago about just what you had mentioned. Let's talk about the things, the leaves in the gutters, those different things. But the one thing that really surprised me was you were talking about this pruning and how to keep the things away from the house. Let's talk about that.
The recommendation is for any of the trees or brushes, the brush that you have around your house, the ornamental stuff growing, is to keep it 6 to 8 feet up off the ground.
How do you do that with hedges, though?
You can't. And really, those, just make sure the hedges are properly watered, that they aren't dying dead or dried out, so right. that if the heat is exposed to them, they're not as likely to burn.
Right. What is the biggest thing that catches fire? Is that the undergrowth that people let happen all the time?
What really is one of the biggest problems is not having a big enough barrier between that wildland interface, the woods behind your house,
okay.
and your house. At least 50 feet.
Okay.
At least 50 feet. Because what can happen is when you get that amount of heat generated in close proximity to your house is the flames don't have to touch your house. It just has to get close enough to heat up the contents in the house to transfer that fire through radiant heat.
Oh, yeah. I didn't think about that.
Yep.
So if you're living out in Pasco County, Polk County, some of these outlying areas, we're using natural gas and stuff like that. How do we protect our tanks? Are they fireproof?
They are not.
Oh, boy.
They're not fireproof. They have some fire resistance.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, you have to heat the tank rather significantly. And even then, they should have a pressure valve on them, which would allow that burning gas or the gas inside to release if it expands too much.
Mm-hmm.
But they are a risk, and if they have enough fire exposure on them for a long enough period of time, they will explode.
Wow.
So that is a potential risk. Mm-hmm. For us, if we get there early enough, obviously we would try to keep a cooling stream of water on the tank
mm-hmm.
or to keep the fire far enough away from it. As a homeowner, if you see fire encroaching on your home to that point, the best thing for you to do is leave. You don't want to put yourself at risk to try to keep that thing from going up.
So many people stay because they think that they can use a garden hose and water their house down, and that is an extremely dangerous decision to make.
It is. It's, while it seems rather simple, and the fact of firefighting is you put the wet stuff on the red stuff, right? You have to have enough wet stuff
right.
to take care of the volume of red stuff because mm-hmm. you've got so much heat and such a volume of fire that a simple hose stream, and in fact, some of our smaller caliber streams, is not enough. It just hits that fire and evaporates.
Does it really?
Yes.
I saw a guy on TV the other day that was talking about that some of the planes are coming in these lakes that are behind them, Pasco and Hernando County. But now the lakes are dry because we've been using all this water to put. Where do we go? What is the worst case scenario?
Shall we not go there?
Yeah, I know.
Eventually, we're looking at another month or so before we see that climate
wow.
pattern change into the rainy season.
That's a lot.
I guess part of it is these are things that we don't have control over.
Mm-hmm.
I have a pond in the back of my house, and I've lived in my home for 12 years, and I don't believe I've seen that pond as low as it is.
Right.
So
we can look out
risk.
The window right here of these apartment complexes. There's hardly any water in even these ponds.
Right.
These are almost up to the people's doorsteps in the summertime when it really
sure.
rains. And I looked out there the other day, and I couldn't believe that it's basically mud.
There are always some larger bodies of water, whether it's lakes or our bays here, that those tankers can fill from.
I see. Can they use salt water?
They can. I'm sure they don't like to because it's pretty corrosive on their aircraft.
Sure.
But they could, in a pinch, use salt water.
Right. What would you like sit down and say, here are the things that you need to do as a homeowner right now? We talked about this water thing. You're talking about, you know, making sure that plants are watered enough, and yet we have water restrictions. So where is that happy medium?
First, follow your restrictions.
Okay.
We don't want you getting in trouble. But the folks that deal with watering, the horticulturists and so on, say that one good deep watering for most of your grasses, whether it's your St. Augustine or your Yeah, the most common yards, and one good watering a week, one deep, at least 1 inch watering is sufficient to keep them alive, even though they'll get kind of wilty looking, they won't die. That's what we want to make sure you do. When you are allowed to water, make sure your lawn is getting a thorough watering on your day or days, and keep it as well hydrated as you can within the confines of the rules that are in place. The second piece of it, again, is look at the outside of your house. If you do border up on green space, you've got woods behind you, make sure you've got a good 50 feet from the wall of your house to those that first line of trees. And make sure in that space that there's nothing else there that can transfer that fire into you. Find ways to create that defensible barrier. And lastly, let us do our job. Your being there at a point in time, if we have a large-scale fire, is a liability not only to you, but to us. Right. Stuff can be replaced. You cannot. So it's best if we're telling you to go, go, and let us do our job.
You know what worries me sometimes? Of course, we just talked about the Gandy fire. But I live near downtown St. Petersburg, not someplace that you normally see big wildfires. But I have this really old fence around my house. And I just think to myself, I mean, when I pull weeds off of it, it snaps. If that started on fire, holy cow, my whole house would be surrounded by that. What can people do? Buy flame retardant materials?
There are flame retardant materials out there, as we came to find out when we built a large haunted house some years ago for a charity fundraiser and had to spray every wall in it with that stuff. So there are materials you can put on it that are flame resistant.
Oh, so you could do it after the fact. I was thinking like pre-treated lumber, but you can spray stuff on your fences and things like that?
You can. There are things that will help prevent that. And mostly something like that, even though it looks like it might be dramatic, I doubt there would be enough flame to impact your house.
Really?
It would just make for a nice show.
Yeah.
And that's something, again, if it did catch fire, call us. Pinellas County in particular is really good about getting resources on scene quickly.
Right.
And we will put the fire out.
You talk about that part of the vision of East Lake Fire Rescue is to be a premier emergency service provider. And you talk about the training. We've talked about that in the education. But technological innovation, does that mean like bigger, better fire trucks?
It means you stay on the cutting edge of what's out there within the confines of the money that's available to buy it.
Which is always a problem.
Right. But we are looking constantly at the new technologies that are out there. You see some pretty extreme stuff like putting out fire with sound waves, putting out fire with lasers.
Really?
There are actually small-scale studies that do that on small-scale fires.
Huh.
Basically for us, the technology hasn't changed a lot as far as the resources that we use.
Mm-hmm.
We do have different kinds of product we can add to water.
Oh, really?
That in the case of a wildland fire, for instance, there is a type of foam we can add to water that lets the water penetrate more into the fuel. So it coats it more. It prevents a rekindle. We use it on structure fires, too, when we're doing mop-up so that we don't get a rekindle on the structure. Your thermal imaging equipment is something that's big right now and has been for the past 10 years but continues to evolve. The units get smaller and less expensive, and now they have thermal imagers, which in essence, if I walk into a burning building, in spite of what you see on television, you can't see anything inside a burning building for the most part. The smoke is so thick that you can't see 2 inches in front of your face. These thermal imagers pick up heat signatures of things. So now based on whatever has a heat signature, you can see essentially through the smoke. So it enables us to work our way through a house, see a body if a body is there, find where the seat of the fire is to attack the fire.
Amazing.
And they're building those now where they are actually put into heads-up displays inside the mask of the air pack that the firefighters wear in some cases.
Kind of like night vision.
Kind of like. It's very similar to night vision.
That's amazing. I know that they say that you are obviously not supposed to burn outside, but that it's okay to do grilling. What's the difference? Is it because it's more contained? I can't imagine. I mean, just using briskets, that it could be just as easy to start a fire. I don't know why they allow that, or is it one of those things where they just know that they can't stop people from doing that?
I think that's it. And there even are certain commercial restrictions, which the Florida Forest Service is the organization on a statewide basis that puts restrictions down, and then your local city or county can lay down other restrictions on top of that if they want to. I believe a lot of counties now have burn bans in place, but they haven't gone to the extreme yet of saying that you can't go to that local park and you know, put your charcoal in one of their little grills or bring your gas grill on your back porch. It gets really hard to enforce that at a point in time. I mean, if I want to cook a big steak, I'm going to use my gas grill on my back porch. The risks I'm going to catch the tree out there on fire are relatively small if I use a little common sense, even though that's an oxymoron. So
don't call me a moron.
Exactly. Or oxy for that matter. But it just, you have to have situational awareness of what you're doing.
Okay.
If you are using an outdoor fire to cook, Make sure you're clearing debris far enough away from it where it's not going to jump that cleared area and catch something else on fire.
It's interesting because I have done a lot of cooking out in a lot of these parks. And you talk about that barrier. They are so specific. I mean, it is so cleaned up there, even when we're not having the issues that we're having now. So they are really paying attention to that.
Very much so.
Yeah.
Very much. And there's a lot of stuff you don't see going on right now, too, that, at least in Pinellas County, that the county is doing proactively. I know there is a fairly large-scale lumber removal system or tree removal going on in the Brooker Creek Preserve, and that's to create a more accessible space should there be fires for us to get into.
Oh.
So the county works on that. The Florida Forest Service in the off-seasons work on that. So if the homeowners aren't giving us a defensive barrier, then they're backing the woods away from those edges somewhat where we've got more room to move. Mm-hmm. It's just that it's resource intense. Mm-hmm. Can't be done all the time, but there is a big push to get that done right now out in those areas. And that's in Pinellas County anyway. That's about 12 square miles worth of wildland out there.
Wow. I know you've been doing this a long time. This is a thankless job, isn't it? I've known a couple firefighters. It's a hot, hard job.
It has its moments, but I would wager to say that most people that are in this business, if you want to call it a mm-hmm. business, I would choose it more a career or calling, are grateful to have the opportunity to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I am. It's been rewarding. It certainly has its challenging moments, but I certainly would not do anything differently in picking this as a career.
Kind of like nurses and a lot of those kind of people.
That's
right?
It. I'm sure that most of us in this are type A personalities. Most of us are fairly intelligent people
mm-hmm.
that could probably go out there and do a lot of different things.
Right.
But I wouldn't want to do anything else.
Do you find that when you go to restaurants that people buy you meals a lot?
It happens every once in a while.
Because I do it all the time to police officers and firefighters. You need to go where I eat.
Bless your heart. Yeah, I look at it this way. People in law enforcement or people in the armed services,
mm-hmm.
my job at least, nobody is shooting at me. So yes, we get put in dangerous situations.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, we are entrusted by the public with one of the highest levels of trust
right.
to go into people's homes and do the things that we do, not only the fire calls, but the medical calls. And you can't take that lightly.
No, you really can't. But like teachers, like nurses, firefighters, people who serve our country, there's just really no way to say thank you enough because it is a dangerous job. And for the most part, you don't get paid very much.
No, it's a decent living.
Right.
You're never going to get rich at it. But
right.
It is a decent living. And it's a job that often, at many times, you don't get the immediate gratification.
Mm-hmm.
But once in a while, those things happen where you know you've made a real difference in somebody's life or saved a life. And that those things are the... They're the telephone poles that hold the wires up off the ground. They're the things that make you realize this is why I do what I do.
Mm-hmm. Just from us, thank you for what you do. And thanks for coming in this morning. You've given us a lot of good information. The one thing that I do want you to do is give us a resource that people, maybe web address or something, where they could get information or go to access some of these education.
One that's very good for wildland fires is the Florida Forest Service's website. And if you just Google Florida Forest Service,
okay.
you can find it. They also have a phone app that's available from that website that you can download to your phone. That is a great resource to see where the fires are, where the active fires are. I keep that on my phone to access every once in a while.
Oh, great.
Like the other day, my wife and I are driving home from Tarpon Springs and see a big column of smoke. And I was able to look it up and see, you know, okay, somebody has already called that in, and
oh, great.
This is what it is. So that's a very handy thing in this day of smartphones.
All right.
But they're a great resource. Our website, certainly, you can go to. It's www.elfr.org.
Okay.
And we have links at our website to all those resources,
great.
Including the Florida Fire Service. And certainly, if anybody wants to get in touch with us directly, we're always available there. We have a public educator who is more than willing to come speak with you. I am always willing to come out and speak as well to help educate folks on how to be safer in what they do and to keep their own risks under control.
Thank you so much for this information. I know that everybody's talking about this. Tom Jamison, the fire chief of the Eastlake Fire District, has been our guest this morning. Thank you for coming on Sunday Morning.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you for having me.